Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Ah, Mr. Jackson.
Okay, so soon. Well, yes. It was amazing to see you in person. That was a nice We've spent some mainland time with you and Bob.
Three years. Well, in March it would be. February.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah, that's right. Three years. That's crazy.
In Boulders.
So we should just preface that we were just in Palm Beach at the Four Seasons Palm Beach. I drove down from the Four Seasons Valhalla for the Free Zone Summit. And what a great few days we had. I mean, that group is just so outstanding. And, you know, only in that room combination and just everybody, you know, thinking along the lines of the Free Zone is such a, I mean, just from gavel to gavel, as they say, from the beginning to the end. Every minute of it was action.
Well, it sort of gives me more proof in that there's a real difference between our brain and our mind. And, you know, my definition is that our brain is our thinking equipment that we're born with. Our mind is how we use our brain to access other people's brain. And and it's, you know, you could really see the, you know, the huge amount of communication and connection and everything that people had during the, during the day. But there's got to be rules and structure. It doesn't happen unless there's rule structure. And, you know, it was interesting. We had the timer there. You know, we had the right, and except the guy in back would forget to set it. So it happened about three times, and I said, Elhanora, he isn't going to remember. So every time you have to go back and you have to let him know to when to reset it, you know. So, but these five, when we had the panel of five, three hit it right on the nose, and three went about a minute over, or two went about a minute over. So it was really good. And it's easier to talk about that subject in 70 minutes than it is in 7 minutes.
Okay. Oh, and, absolutely.
And but I thought they all contributed a different dimension. And I think that was good for the audience because so many, you know less than the people, for the most part, know less than the panelists. So the panelists know more. And I said, you know, you got to make it useful to where they are, okay?
And and I think that's
ChatGPT.
Yeah,
it's funny because every time I write an email now, I'm got a little PS at the bottom. This was not written with the help of ChatGPT.
Right. That's so funny.
It's improved my writing, though. It's improved my writing. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm writing in such a way that ChatGPT could not have written it.
Yeah, this is, I was just having a chat this morning with Chris McAllister, who you may know.
Yeah, I know Chris.
Real estate broker in Ohio.
Yeah.
And he's been experimenting with ChatGPT. Today was his first day. And he had it write some articles for landlords, just tips, you know, things like there. And he was amazed at how great they really were. And then I tipped him off on the rewrite it in the voice of Ryan Reynolds tip to make it more conversational. And he's like, every one of these are just could definitely send out and add my super signature to it as the, you know, whenever you're ready, here's some ways that can help you. That, and I was thinking for anything that is like a, what I call a book report, meaning information is already known and it's gathering research and presenting objective data or objective information that's widely available, that's the perfect use. It's the perfect use for it. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't have access to, you know, your insight and your subjective information or thinking, or I call them field reports, your insights and experience. in something.
Yeah, it's really interesting. All my books are written in the second person personal, you know, which starts with the word, you know, already know this. And I haven't tried it, or I haven't had it tested out, but I think it would have great difficulty with the second person personal. Okay.
Yeah. Which I think is the best way. That's what we really want to read. That's what makes it engaging is reading.
Well,
that's the way I write all my emails same way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, you really have to know the reader. In other words, you're making claims about the reader. And you have to have unique long-term knowledge about the reader, at least who you want to be the reader, and I find that when you write this and it doesn't really relate to their experience, then they just, they just stop. They won't read any further. But I'm just looking for a particular type of reader of any of our written communication. You know, it's a successful, talented, ambitious, experienced entrepreneur looking for a jump, who's looking for a job, and everything like that. So the vast majority of what I write would be not interesting to the general public.
That's a really interesting way you just described that. Like, I'm starting to see having, four, five, six words that describe who the person is that you're looking for. I've been watching Deion Sanders' journey taking over the head coaching role of Colorado. And, he's very crystal clear on who he's looking for. He's looking for guys that are fast, tough, disciplined, smart, with character. That's his five criteria for somebody to be one of his recruits or who they're looking for on the team. And I think what you just described, that's, what's a five-star prospect or five-star audience for strategic coach?
Well, and you're positioning in your market. In other words, I'm not looking for the world here. I'm not trying to be useful to the world. I'm just trying to be useful to a particular, first of all, totally entrepreneurial. You have to be entrepreneurial. You have to have experience. And you're either finishing stage one and you're looking for stage two, or you're finishing stage two and you're looking for stage three. But you're looking for what's next, looking for. And you've been suspended. I think usually I used to say the people who joined the program decided to do it a year before they found out about it. And they said, and what they've come to the conclusion that they need something, they've gotten where they are through their own devices, but now they're looking for something. Now they're looking for something and they know they need guidance, they need help, they need new knowledge, they need new mindsets, and they're not getting them from any of their existing networks.
Yes.
But they had already made the decision that I got to find something. They just didn't know what the something was.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I was fascinated by just everybody that I talked to at Free Zone, of just the number of different types of, businesses or the ways people run business. It's such a variety. It's amazing.
Well, it's as unique as they are as people, What do unique entrepreneurs have in common with each other? Nothing. Either the word unique means something or it doesn't,
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if a psychologist or a sociologist can figure out who you are as an entrepreneur, you're not an entrepreneur.
Yeah. But that's the thing that blends them all together. That's why I mentioned that, part of the longevity or that what makes strategic coach so infinitely interesting for a long period of time is that it's thinking about your thinking.
Yeah.
It's not, hey, let me tell you about my thinking. They're not coming to hear about your thinking. They're thinking because, you're giving tools for thinking about our thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, when I first started coaching, there was a legendary motivational speaker, you know, in those days. So this would be, you know, 80s, let's say, you know, when I really knew what I was doing. And his name was Jim Rohn. Do you know Jim Rohn?
I know Jim. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And someone said that they had seen him right the first year that he went out. And he was now 25, 30 years later. And he said, it's word for word. It's word
the
for
same.
Word what he did.
Yeah.
The same. And I said, it just shows you there's a place for that.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Funny.
And
that's, I heard somebody talk about that. You can either have the same talk and find a different audience, or you can have the same audience and evolve your talk.
Yeah. Yeah, and both work. The thing is that there's, because it depends upon who the audience is.
Right.
It just depends on the audience and people are at, you know, totally different places in their personal progress and their personal development. Mm-hmm. And there's some sort of outside coaching that's probably useful for everybody at every level.
Yeah, absolutely. That contextually, that's where we all have a common kind of experience, you know. I've been writing and thinking about our conversation about the VCR formula and the questions of, you know, that helping people have a conversation together about possible collaborations by just kind of examining the assets that we have uniquely for each of the vision, capability, and reach elements.
Yeah.
And it's really...
Dean, is something being crinkled at your end? I'm hearing crinkling sound.
I don't know. Let's hear.
Yeah. Not hearing it now, but I was
okay.
I was hearing the... Yeah. And I just wonder if he's listening in, that's all.
Okay. No, I don't think so.
Sound like somebody was listening in, but they were unwrapping their burger.
There we go. Let's keep an
ear. Yeah, keep an ear. You know, you never know these days. I mean,
you never know. China is flying balloons over everywhere.
Well, I feel safe about that particular issue because I don't think that the Chinese can steal anything that I do that would do them any good. That would do them any good.
I was thinking about that same thing. Like, I wonder, what is it that they're surveilling? What are they looking for, would you think?
I think it's probably electronic communication networks. I think that basically they're looking for... One is they're about 4,000 years old and are largely ignorant of what happens outside of China. They are probably the most insular, long-term people on the planet who just, first of all, they're kind of tone deaf about what constitutes communication. Like, they're just basically very tone deaf. And I think that they kind of think that if they get all the content, they'll get the context. You know, and try to get the context of what's going to happen tomorrow in the United States from all the content today. Mm. Just leaves you very confused.
I can't even imagine, right? Like, you're right, like that insular view and the, even like North Korea, for instance, is really locked down. That's pretty, I did hear that there's a difference between TikTok in China and in the United States or the rest of the world, in that in China, the things that get distributed or get, you know, the algorithm promotes are, you know, kids who are doing things that are notable, like, you know, achievements and possible things and all.
Well, they're totalitarian. I mean, first of all, you have to accept it's a totalitarian country.
Yeah.
So they're only looking for messages that reinforce
That's
their
right.
total control.
Yeah. Yes, right, right.
Yeah. And the kids have learned that, and they've just, you know, about 20% of them are unemployed and just don't try. They mm-hmm. just don't try. And that is a severe threat to the country, that they, you know, not involved in the striving to get where they are. So the kids sort of, they sort of figured it out that mm-hmm. if they take pictures of me all day, I'm just basically lying down.
What are the,
For some reason, I can be in any conversation except a conversation with Dean Jackson. And it's the only one that Siri interferes with. So I think somebody at Apple is especially interested in our conversation.
Yes.
Yeah. They're especially interested in our conversations at Apple. And because they're probably having to interpret what the Chinese are picking up, so Apple is
they're helping in the cahoots. Yeah, I wonder if the I was thinking about what people.
You know, it's very surveilling other people is a really time-consuming activity.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I was just thinking
I have a phrase, being myself is a full-time job. I mean, don't you find that sort of true for you? I just find on top of what I'm up to is a full-time job.
That's exactly it. Plus, a full-time job plus. There's still not a time.
Yeah, I have to have who's.
That's exactly right. I was thinking about what Peter Zion said about China, like as you're just describing that. What's the current population of China right now?
Well, it's an approximation because they don't really have much handle on it, you know. But the number that Peter uses, that the Chinese uses, is about 1.3 billion. And they just revised that downward from 1.4 about 7 months ago because they did a census and they found that they had overcounted by
100 million.
You know, they had overcounted by 100 million, and that's because they haven't really got good recent statistics, and so that 100 million would actually be people who are younger than 40 years old. And that's the worst possible. And 70% of them are male, or 70% of the miscounts are female. Okay, so that means they're missing about 70 million women who are in childbearing age. And they're getting desperate now. They're creating all sorts of incentive systems for people to have as many children and everything else. But there's no possibility of it happening because everybody's locked in to making money. First of all, you don't have the money to have more children. The other thing is you don't have time to have more children. And the other thing is that you don't have the food for more children. I mean, children are expensive, you know, they're really expensive. So, and he said there's a point where you're gradually losing population and then it happens suddenly. Then there's a real drop and they're just starting the drop stage right now.
He saying that their own estimation is by 2100?
Half the population by 2100. Yeah. So that'd be 600.
So you wonder what a world looks like with half the people. There's a show on TV that used to be called Life After People. And it was a really interesting thing to project and show what, you know, a major city would look like if the people vanished.
Well, there is no world without people because we're the ones who create the world.
Yes. And that's kind of
there's no nature. So there was no nature until we named it.
That's
just a bunch of stuff, you know. A bunch of stuff, you know.
And was that you saying, Dan, that this is like the, I don't know whether it was you or someone else that I heard talking about this 8 billion being the kind of high watermark for the
next billion that they announce will be 7. Peter Zion says that too. That's just people dying naturally. No cataclysm, no famine, no disaster. That's just the top heavy
difference.
Global population. People just dying, in their 70s or 80s or whatever. That we're very top heavy. It's the most top heavy population in the history of history.
Yeah. Oh wow. And how is that true for the U.S. and Canada?
No.
Canada are
Definitely Canada, not Canada and the U.S. could happen to Australia and could happen to New Zealand. Well, Australia's losing population pretty well, or they will lose population. And I mean, the U.S. is probably the most unique because we can turn on the taps
With immigration.
At any given time, there's roughly 100 million people who would move to the United States if they could. Mm-hmm. Canada's big problem is that it put in severe restrictions who could get into Canada. And you had to have money, you had to have education, mm-hmm. had to have training. And the problem with it is that they're not really becoming citizens when they come to Canada. They become property owners, and they're driving the price of residential real estate through the roof. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's almost impossible, you and I, if we were in Toronto today at, when we were in our early 20s, we probably would never be able to buy a house in Toronto. You'd have to go, to go to Orangeville, or you'd have to go to some outlying area. That's the real price. In the United States, a lot of low income people come into the country. I mean, everybody's freaked out because the border situation and the illegal immigrants, but a lot of young people are coming in. And ultimately, that's good for the country if they don't turn criminal. The real problem with the illegal immigration is all the bad people who come across, the drug dealers, the gang members and everything. So the Mexican gangs have pretty well taken over crime in almost every major American city now.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. MS-13?
Yeah,
the MS-13, exactly. They're from one of the Central American countries, and they're really bad news, And and I've been talking to people who have military background, and they said the U.S. is starting to create a whole special force that would be geared just to the cartels, and they're basically telling Mexico, if you don't handle the cartel problem in Mexico, we're going to handle the cartel problem in Mexico. They'll reach a point where they just focus on the problem and it becomes a hot political issue. And if you're another country, you never want the United States to just give your country its full attention.
Right. Right. Exactly.
It's like Canada. Every Canadian, who's slightly anti-American, I've been here, this is my 52nd year. And they said, you know what, I can't stand, the U.S. doesn't even pay any attention to us. And I said, have you ever read any history of the world where the U.S. does pay attention to you?
I got into a discussion with a teacher in Canada at New Year's Eve.
How'd that happen?
What happened?
How'd that happen?
I know, exactly. We were at a New Year's Eve party, and she was going on about how Americans are ignorant about Canada, that they don't know anything about Canada.
I would say that's true.
Absolutely. And I called her out on it. I said to her, I said, why would they? Right? Like, why would they? That you're sitting in your position, you know more about the United States because all eyes are on the United States. Right. That's why you know more about them. But I said to them, I said, how many provinces are in Mexico or states? Do they have that? Who's the president of Guatemala?
Yeah.
I started asking her just general knowledge about any other country in the world, yeah, other than the United States and maybe the UK. And she had no knowledge. I said, you are just as ignorant about every other country in the world as Americans are about Canada. Why would they know about Canada?
That's great.
Yeah. And she was like, huh, I never thought of it like that. But it's the proximity, everything, all of our entertainment, all of our news, all of our culture, everything has come from the United States, you know?
Yeah, well, Joe sent me, I don't know if he sent it to you, but he sent, he had shown him that if you go to the top of basically Lake Michigan, okay, you go to Port Huron, you know, Sarnia is, and you draw a straight line east right across Canada. There's a red line, there's that which is above the red line, and it's like 70% of the Canadian population lives in that parts of Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritimes, 75% of the population. And I said, and I sent back to him and I said, well, actually, if you think about it, that 90% of the Canadian population lives within 100 miles of the U.S. border. And that goes all the from Nova Scotia, that goes all the way from Nova Scotia to British Columbia. Okay,
yeah,
it's just a 100-mile ribbon. That's about 3,500 miles. But I said the average American lives about 500 to 600 miles from Canada. Okay, and so they don't get Canadian TV. They don't get Canadian anything. All Canadians get American TV.
That's right.
I mean, Northern Ohio. Uh-huh. I grew up about 40 miles, I would say 45 miles south of the Chatham area, sort of the Chatham, that southwest Ontario area. And we got we got CBC television. We got CBC.
Oh, you did? Okay. Radio.
Yeah, like we got Canadian football when I was growing up. Right. The day had to be right as far as the antenna goes. You could pick it up. And so we were close, and I said, and so I knew a lot about Canada, and I was interested. But it's an interesting thing. But what I found more and more, Canadians don't know Canadian history. I mean,
I think that's absolutely true.
My team, if I sit down and I said, do you know, how Canada got formed? And I said, do you know what the most recent province was to Canada? And he said, well, they all came 1867. I said, no. I said, one of them came in 1948. And they said, which province? I said, Newfoundland.
Newfoundland,
It was British territory. It was like British territory. Yeah. And do you know that there's two essentially Canadian islands that actually belong to France?
And one's off the coast of Newfoundland. Yeah.
Two of them, both of them, Saint-Pierre and Miquelon are both. And they're just like a department, just French. I mean, it's not like it's a French territory. They're France. I mean, they have gendarmes. They have gendarmes there. And, it's probably a half-hour flight from St. John's and Inland. That's where all the really in-depth language schools are. You go there because everybody speaks French. And it's French. Yeah. It's not Quebecois French.
Right. I think that's all fascinating. I love things like that. Like, most people don't realize that the southernmost part of Ontario is, further south than 20 or 25% of the United States. People think about it as like, if you just draw that, latitudinal line there, that it's...
Like Chatham. Chatham is probably the southernmost. And Chatham, they might as well have palm trees.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, same. It is the same as Napa, like as the wine region. That's why St. Catharines and Niagara on the Lake. Yeah. That's why are so conducive to wine growing. They're essentially
Pelee Island. Point Pelee.
Yeah.
And one last
little trivia thing is you can drive the distance from Toronto to Florida north and still be in Ontario. I thought that was pretty interesting. Because Ontario is big. Yeah, very big. But we only think about the, we only think about the 2-hour ribbon around Toronto as Ontario.
Yeah.
You know, that's where all the population is. For sure.
Well, but it's even further east to west because from the
Manitoba border,
Cornwall to Kenora. I think that's the thing. It's the same distance from Washington, D.C. to Kansas City.
Oh, that's amazing.
If you look at the meridians, as the meridians come down, and the meridian isn't because the distance are shorter as you go north, but it shows you the distance. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you've actually driven that, either if you've actually traveled north to the top, and
I'm not.
I'm worried about you.
I have not been by car. I haven't been farther than Muskoka in a car north of Ontario. I've flown. I've been to Ottawa and to Montreal and to Quebec City and all that, but never driven north of
Muskoka. Mine would be Algonquin Park. I've driven to Montreal. That's the distance. That's probably the furthest we've ever driven. We've driven to Montreal, which is a one time experience. He wouldn't want to do it twice. It was interesting that we were at the Four Seasons, which, of course, is a Canadian creation. Not anymore. Bill Gates owns most of the, I think Izzy Sharp still has 10%. I think he bought out the Saudi Prince. Saudi Prince. And so Bill Gates, owns it, and not a role model for hospitality and service, not exactly. But that was that's my 30th Four Seasons hotel that I've stayed in, the one in Palm Beach. Yeah.
Wow.
And I've stayed in Four Seasons hotels that don't exist. And I've got one that hardly anybody stayed in, the Four Seasons Belleville.
Belleville. Is that a real thing? Okay. Oh, that was in the early days?
It was. Yeah. It's not anymore. Right. And what it was a collaboration between the Four Seasons and Bell Canada.
Okay.
So Bell Canada has a big conference center in Belleville, or did in those days. And, they'd have executives, but they just had motels for their people to stay at, and Sharp and whoever was in charge of Bell were talking one day and say, would you ever have need for a training hotel? And he talked Izzy Sharp into that. They took over an existing property, and they seasoned it and everything like that. And so Babs and I were driving back, I think, from Ottawa. We were driving, and we were on the 401. And I knew about it. And I said, there's a – and she was really tired. It was a hot day, and the air conditioning had gone out on her Saab. She had a Saab. I said, why don't we – it was about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And I said, why don't we just stop? There's Four Seasons. She said, Four Seasons? I said, they have a training hotel. And, the restaurant was great and everything else. And I just said, I just have to go to the restroom. I went to the restroom, and I signed us up to stay overnight. And I came back and I said, here's the key. And so I've talked to a lot of people, but nobody had ever stayed at the Four Seasons Bell.
That's great. I like that. That's a good feather in your fourth
room.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must have been like their original motel on Jarvis Street.
Have you read his book, The Story of the Four Seasons? Yeah, it was really well done.
I
like that,
it was
hearing.
Jarvis Street was still the red light district in those states, when they started that. It was, that property wasn't known for its overnight guests.
Hourly rates only, huh? Is that what it was?
Hourly rates, that's, yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. And even those who did stay overnight broke it down into 6 or 7 sessions, you know.
Anyways.
But the genius of it is he got the Bell Canada, or CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, for those of who are not listening from Canada and are ignorant of Canada, that it was the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation was right across the street. This is their main radio station in Toronto, in Canada, actually, their main radio station in Canada. And he convinced them that they should put a studio right in his motel, and that it was going to be first class. The motel was going to be first class, and all their guests could stay right there. And then they could just have breakfast and go. They didn't have to walk. They didn't have to go outside. They could do the recording studio. And so it was Hollywood people and Broadway people and country and Western people. And everybody said, this is the most amazing motel you've ever been to in your life. And that's where the outside connection, you know, really came from.
I love that. I don't know what it is, but I really love hospitality kind of stories. Like I loved reading that book. I love reading about Danny Meyer. And I love, you know, Chip Conley, the Joie de Vivre.
Danny Meyer's the Union Square restaurant chains, New York City. Yeah. Chip Conley, who's he? I've heard his name, but I don't.
So he owns hotels called, mostly West Coast hotels, but he's a hotelier. And, you know, that hospitality type of, you know, approach. And I think it's funny that every one of them, you know, you realize the intersection of it all is design is a big part of everything. I think that is, you know, like you look at what the Four Seasons, their approach of starting with the most beautiful canvas, you know, to start with.
Yeah.
They start with like premier properties. And
I don't know.
The new Four Seasons in London at 10 Trinity Circle is just beautiful. It's in this, you know, amazingly historic building overlooking the King London Tower Bridge. And, but you know, it just everything about that environment is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to that. You can't have, I don't know whether it's like the vessel for hospitality. Like I would put Strategic Coach definitely has a 5-star hospitality tone to it, right? When you go into either Chicago or Toronto, and everything about the environment, the design, the, you know, the volume of staff and, you know, the way you're welcomed, and I mean, it's definitely a 5-star
vibe. Thank you.
One
of the things, I mean, I really studied the Four Seasons was one of my big studies in the 80s, end of the 80s, crossover to the 90s. So we got our first, you know, workshop in 1989. And, you know, and I had really studied four companies. One was Four Seasons, and that's had a lot of experience during the 80s. 1980, I started staying at Four Seasons hotels, and Babs and I, you know, both of us stayed. The other one was Canyon Ranch, which was the role model. It was the industry changer for luxury health spas in the world, you know, and, you know, Babs and I have been stayed there 50 times or so. And then Starbucks, you know, especially from packaging, and then Apple. So those are my four packaging models.
Benchmarks,
And probably Apple has done the best in the technology world of not hassling you. I think probably Apple generally, their platform and their access is the most hassle-free technology platform
There
is. And you know, and Starbucks was, you know, the, I mean, they were the pioneer that introduced espresso-based coffee to North America, to the United States, and you know, and yeah, so they were all industry transformers. I think all four of them were industry transformers. But the big thing was the client-centeredness, the customer-centered their model, you know. And I think Starbucks has probably fallen off the most. It's easiest one to reproduce. I mean, easiest one to reproduce. And all their competition is people who were trained at Starbucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, I think that's evident. You know, now when you look at Strategic Coach through any one of those lenses and you see the impact, you see the influence of it on Strategic Coach. Do you have some sort of conscious, I don't know what you call it, documentation or, you know, style guide or a tone thing? How do you communicate that or convey that to maintain that to everyone?
Actually, because our, you know, and I think this is true for any company, that your employees are the public's. All impressions of your company come from customer contacts with your employees. Mm. And so one of the things we got right of the way that we would, you know, our attitude to our employees is what we want to pass on to our customers. Okay, so we put all the emphasis on our, you know, our emphasis. And the first thing is that when you join us, we're going to discover what your unique ability is. And we want to know what's unique about you. And you're going to have to do work because we need work done. But as soon as we can, we want to get you into, you know, into a situation where you're doing what you love and you're doing what you're best at. And you're in teamwork with other people who are doing the same thing. And that one concept, I think, is the cornerstone for everything else, the packaging and everything. And, you know, I have sort of a packaging kind of mentality, and I've established all the, you know, the type style.
Brand guideline.
I was one
style
of the,
guide.
Yeah. You know, the whole graphic thing. I'm the one who established, you know, all that. And, you know, and it's the only part of the company that doesn't have to do with my coaching where I'm on it. If I see any breakdown in the use of type or the, you know, something just doesn't look like coach, you know.
And
I'm all over it. And one of the things I'm interested in the ChatGPT is that we have a lot of existing material that I never see, like emails that go out and printed materials about program materials and everything like that that I don't see. And I'll come across it. And it's like it's from the Department of Motor Vehicles. It's written, you know, hiding the compelling offer somewhere deep, you know, and it's all convincing. It's all convincing argument stuff. It's not compelling offer.
And
we could run it through, you know, we could run it through. I said, if you don't use GPT, everything's going to sound like it comes from Donald Trump. I'm going to run it through the Donald Trump filter. And that was a grabber, what Mike started off with, wasn't it?
It really was. I mean, that all kind of set the...
I mean, I was watching the audience. I was watching the audience.
Oh, yeah.
And some were real pleased and a lot were noncommittal.
Well, I think a lot of people didn't realize what was happening. Like, you know, here's this, what Mike did in his portion of the panel in his 7 minutes was action packed. I mean, just showing what the capabilities are, but to show how, you know, he basically took ChatGPT to write an introduction for Babs Smith and to then take that. And he created a Donald Trump visual. I forget which place he used for that, but he was showing all the tools that he used to do it, but to create a video image of Donald Trump and then have it speak with moving lips and moving things, introducing Babs. And it was just
Babs, it was me.
Oh, sorry.
Because I had,
right. You did someone with Babs.
I had done the original audio with Babs, and she said, I find that really creepy. She said, don't let that. Don't let anybody else hear that. I find it really. So no way. I tell you, no way we were going to do it on Babs. I tell you, but I didn't know exactly what Mike was going to do. I didn't know the visual part of it, that some AI program will actually create the face, you know, and everything else. Yeah. And Mike has got a whole section at A360.
Yeah,
because exactly. I told Peter that he
basically.
I told Peter that what he was doing, and he says, oh, God, I got to get in touch with him. And, you know, he created the mindset scorecard there, and we're going to have a little discussion about the use of the mindset
the
scorecard. But I let it pass, you know, he with a 60-point type property. You know, so,
capital P.
Yeah. So, anyway,
got
to make sure that they have that it's a strategic coach tool. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
I'll let him use it at A360, but it's got to, you can't repackage the logo.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, you look at this, that I think that sort of use case wrapping, like, I think we're looking at ChatGPT as, you know, this artificial intelligence that's kind of like the app, you know, the iOS platform, and now we're going to see different apps layered on top of it. And I could see that as like a, you know, a specific use case, like a scorecard generator that could be a strategic coach tool, you know, to make that it's programmed in just guiding you through the output of creating your scorecard, you know?
Yeah. You know, the thing is that I think that looking for a particular capability is just going to get you bogged down. My feeling is that you actually create a project. You actually create a project. I want something that looks like this. Now I'm going to have all of the AI apps bid on my project, what they can do with the project, because I treat I treat AI like it's a dog. You have to let the dog know who the alpha. You have to let the dog know who the alpha is right away.
You know?
I mean, we had that discussion, and that is it. It has to be all intention driven. You have to. You know, technology will kill you if you're just trying to find out, you know, what can it do? It'll do you for the rest of your life. That's what it'll do.
Yeah.
You know, you have to. And that's the problem with it. It's very powerful. It's very fast. It's got a magical quality to it. You know, nobody was ever seduced who wasn't looking for sex.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. If you're an alcoholic, you don't go into a bar to get a glass of water. You know, say, I'm really thirsty. I'm going to go into the bar and get a glass of water.
Have you got any milk? Yeah.
You know, you don't put yourself in a situation where, you know, you can get captured. And that's why I'm still wondering from earlier in our conversation what you were doing at a party where there was a teacher.
That's right. She's the wife of one of my friends. That's a big one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I tell you, this is a teacher killer. This is a school system. I think ChatGPT is a total educational system killer.
Could you imagine with Khan, all the information of Khan Academy, for instance, loaded in?
Khan Academy and GPT. Khan Academy and GPT. You just replace. Yeah. Now, and then the school system can just return to what it actually is. It's a body storage service for, you know, storing your children's bodies for 5 or 6 hours a day, or it's daycare for 5 or 6 hours, you know, but it's very funny. The Toronto School Board, because you have to, you know, if you're going on Wi-Fi, if you're in any school, you have to log on to the Wi-Fi of your, you know, of the school. So they banned ChatGPT in any area of the Toronto School Board, any territory of the Toronto School Board.
Well,
okay. And I said, well, that'll discourage the kids. I mean,
that's
like,
what I mean. That'll stop
if they don't want us looking at it, we better not look at it.
Out in the open. Yeah.
Do not look at this dirty picture. Do not look at it.
Oh,
you know?
My goodness.
And I said, wow. I said, there's some sort of marketing campaign. How do you get it into the school system? You ban it.
Right. Well, that was the Shep Gordon lesson about Alice Cooper.
Barbara Streisand. Barbara Streisand syndrome, you know.
Yeah.
You know that story, right? Yeah. Yeah, I think you told me about it.
Yeah.
And, Yeah. I don't want anyone to see the aerial photograph of my mansion in Malibu.
Right.
Now you can create a whole helicopter. Yeah, service. People wanting to look down at Barbara Streisand. Yeah. So one of our team members, her husband's a professor at one of the community colleges here in Toronto, and he's kind of tech savvy. So right after the 30th of November, when ChatGPT came out, I may have said this on an earlier call, so I'm just forcing previous learning probably. Mm. But he immediately went and did it, and he said, this is really terrific. So next class, he went in, he said, you have your end of term papers coming in, and I've got a request now that you can't get an A unless the paper comes in where you've used ChatGPT as a companion to write the essay.
Yeah,
you right. get a B, but you can't get an A. And
uh-huh.
He said, in the meantime, he created an app for himself on grading papers based on use of ChatGPT.
Well, smart. It's so great,
that shows
right?
you two approaches. That shows
yeah.
you two approaches to education.
Okay. Yeah.
Which one would you bet on?
Yeah, embrace it, right? That one.
Yeah.
I heard. I watched a video this week of Alex Sarmozy had challenged his team to use AI and these new technologies to replace themselves. Is to figure out ways to replace themselves with AI.
That's a really great. You know what would be useful is Dior's 9 verbs.
Yes. That would be great.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing, embracing things, is so much better. I've heard of other people paying $1,000 bonuses for people who can create something that replaces a portion of their
what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. And who was it that was Evan Ryan, you know, who spoke fifth? He was the fifth speaker.
Yeah.
And he said he's incentivizing his staff that the more AI apps you learn, I don't know what the incentives are. He didn't mention money.
Right.
But, yeah.
Interesting times,
but,
Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really super. And I just want to tell you, Babs and I both totally enjoyed, you know, our discussions with Luba, you know, and it was, you know, I really went after her Ukrainian story. You know, I just ate that up. And it's a remarkable story. It's a, you know, 10 children born there, all moved to Oregon. And now. That could be Idaho, you know. I mean, you know the story about what's going on? Huh?
No, what's going on?
Well, there's two parts of Oregon. There's Portland and not Portland. Okay?
Right.
And so I think it's 8 counties have now had referendums where they said they want to secede from Oregon and join Idaho. Okay, they want to join Idaho.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
And it's legal. It's legal that parts of a state with a referendum properly organized, properly meeting criteria can secede from a state, providing the state that they want to join approves it. And Idaho is all for it. Oh, wow. And I think the reason is that it's a section that goes right to the Pacific. It's eastern and southern Idaho, or Oregon, that goes right there. And Idaho said, you can't beat it. We got the mountains, we got everything else, and now we've got the Pacific coast. I mean, this would be really great. I mean, there's nothing but pluses for Idaho here, and they're very productive. I mean, they're all people who actually work for a living, you know.
But
Idaho would become the third largest geographic state in the lower 48. That's how big it is. But West Virginia got created this way. But West Virginia didn't join anybody. They just seceded from Virginia. But it has to be approved by Congress, and it would pass the House right now. And the only question, would it pass the Senate? Because it's a simple majority. It just has to be 51 in the Senate. But it'd be really interesting. But I think it'll happen. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's a bit like Brexit. You know, it's going to happen. And anyway, so it's really interesting. And it puts a pause.
Next thing you know, parts of Nebraska are going to want to separate and form further South Dakota. I saw a thing.
Yeah, that's like the only Canadians who were all for Quebec seceding were the Newfoundlanders,
right.
Because they'd be that much closer to Toronto.
That's right. No, I saw a map of the United States labeled by people from the UK without the names of the states on it. So they were naming, you know, everybody can recognize Florida and California and, you know, pretty much make your way around the perimeter and stuff. But they were labeling, you know, it was North Dakota, South Dakota, and then they had it further South Dakota instead of Nebraska.
Yeah, it's like the New Yorker. Did you ever see the New Yorker cover, how New Yorkers look at the United States?
Yes, I did. Yes.
There's Newark.
Old people.
So they're
here.
Looking west. Going west, mm-hmm. you have 2nd Avenue, 3rd Avenue, 4th Avenue, 5th Avenue, 6th Avenue, you know, 10th Avenue, the Hudson, and then you have Newark, then you have Chicago, then you have some Soraya cactus trees, and then you have Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then China. And then China.
Oh, so funny.
But it's true. I mean, it's like your school teacher. I mean, how much of Toronto do I know? You know, if it's above Davenport, I don't really know what you're talking about. You know, if it's west of Dufferin, I don't really know what you're talking about. If it's east of Victoria Park, I don't really know what you're talking about, you know.
Right.
We
all have our little bubbles on the mainland that we're familiar with. Yeah.
And as it should be.
That's exactly right. And we can all come together here in Cloudlandia.
Yep. And as strategic
I love it.
Coach.
That's right.
In the free zone.
I love it.
Okay.
Well, Dan, it was a great conversation. I always enjoy these. I look forward to next week.
Yep. And it is a week from now. Thanks a lot for going to 11:30. We were with Shannon and Bruce, and we...
Oh, nice.
And they couldn't make the breakfast until 10 o'clock, so... We just wanted to see if we could. That's great.
Instead of a three Waller hug, I got three hugs from one Waller in Palm Beach. So that was, a nice compromise.
All right.
Okay. Have a great week.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Dan. Bye.